and welcome to the College of Creation. My name is Dan.
And my name is Michael.
And this is a Dungeons & Dragons podcast. Must be said.
It's true.
A Dungeons & Dragons podcast. This is a show where me and Michael, who are DMs who love to homebrew item spells, creatures, and features for Dungeons & Dragons, we make homebrew every single episode based on prompts that we get from our listeners. And that's what we do. That's what we do. How are you doing today, Michael?
You know, I've had a bit of a trying week, but boy, am I happy to be here talking about my favorite game with you.
Your favorite game, Castlevania, because we made for our creations today subclasses inspired by characters from Castlevania, specifically Trevor and Richter Belmont. I still couldn't figure out why those two. I'm going to be really honest. The prompt was really specifically those two characters.
Yeah.
And I did some research. I looked into this game because I've never played it before. I'm not really familiar with the lore. I did my best, but I am not entirely sure why those two characters are the ones who got picked out of the like dozen or more Belmonts in the game franchise.
There are so many. It's a long lineage of Belmonts, all doing basically the same thing.
Yeah.
They're all kind of echoes of each other, in each iteration of the game, which, you know, is great for the consistency of the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know what you're going to get when you play the newest installment of any franchise. Just crazy that it's been so many characters, which is cool. I guess part of the package is the lore, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not all games have as deep of a story embedded in the game. But so that
True.
Is very cool to me.
Yeah, and it spans different medias. It's not just a video game series. It's also got manga. It had an animated show. So that is very cool. I do gotta say, it is interesting to me as an outsider to this game franchise, that it does seem like you're absolutely right. Like, a lot of the characters, a lot of the primary characters in these video games seem to be more or less the same skeleton with different sort of aesthetics and, you know, a slightly different name and backstory and everything like that. But the general vibe is mostly always the same family of vampire hunters. You have a whip or chain-like weapon that can kill vampires.
I had a strange time working my way through this prompt because I don't love what I made, and that's not because I don't think it is a functional subclass. I think the subclass that I made is actually pretty good and true to what I think the prompt was asking for. I think it was just an unfortunate case of the timing of when the prompt came up, because I've already made something like this, and because of the specificity of the prompt, I didn't want to venture too far away from what it was asking. So I ended up kind of just carbon copying some older stuff that I made to make it work the way that the prompt required. An interesting time for me this week, kind of patching things together from new ideas and old. But all that said, I went first last week. Do you want to just get into it, Dan?
Sure, let's go ahead. Let's get into it. Let me start by saying I am not super familiar with the lore of Castlevania, so I did my best to kind of latch on to the pieces that I did know, did some research, and also kind of tried to figure out what would be fun to play with from all of the classes. I feel like there's some really easy go-to classes to jump towards with this.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about Paladin and I thought about Ranger. Ranger, of course, I think deserves a class that's like vampire hunter focused. I think that would be cool.
Yeah.
I also think that like Paladin has some of that built into the base class, but sort of an oath that was very focused specifically on the taking down of like Dracula in particular could be really fun if you're doing like a Dracula or even a Strahd game, if the oath is like my oath is kill the vampire. That could be fun.
Right.
But that's really not the vibe that we're going for, because again, like you say, these people aren't really magical. They don't have magic. They just have extra strength and access to some magical type things.
Yes.
But it's really hard to make that work without just being like, it's a fighter with a whip. And I was like, that's not fun. I don't want to make a fighter with a whip, because that's not fun for me to make. So I went back into some of our backlog and realized that there could be a really fun opportunity for me to make a subclass for a class that we recently touched back on again.
Mm.
And I think fits very nicely. And that is the Blood Hunter.
Yeah.
So I have created a Blood Hunter subclass that is the Vampire Killer, slightly adjacent to the Ghost Slayer, although a little bit more focused around the weapon is attached to the lore of the game, and with a little bit of additional lore relating to the lineage of the Belmonts as the folks. So I'm sorry to our prompter. I didn't really go straight Trevor Belmont here. I did kind of just go generic Belmont person, but, you know.
I think that applies across the board, though.
I hope you're okay with it.
Yeah, I didn't mention Richter in mine a single time, so we're all good. Yeah.
So if you would like to go back and check out the episode 70, where we talked through our changes to the Blood Hunter to kind of update it for 2024 rules and just kind of freshen up the class and just do a few, you know, quality of life changes that we thought were cool. I would recommend going back and checking that out, or you can go and check out the PDF of that and read through it. It's on patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod, and that's totally free. You just got to go find the episode 70 file, and there you should find the Blood Hunter changes that I made specifically. I made this with the framework that I had built out. If you'll recall, our changes to the Blood Hunter were fairly similar, I would say. We had a few differences in it, but the big ones being, you know, changing the primary ability to Constitution, and changing a little bit of how a few of the later features work. Brand of Castigation sort of done away with in the level of complexity that it has, but keeping a lot of the core things. Blood Curses, simplifying the rites down to just elemental and esoteric rites rather than a single rite for every elemental damage type and that sort of thing. But very much the same for you and I. We did a lot of similar changes. So this is meant to slot into my changes in particular, just because I had the file on hand. And so you come from a long and storied clan sworn to a single goal: to eradicate fiends and foul creatures that stalk the night and prey on the pure souls in society. Your training has made you an expert at sniffing these beings out and finding their weaknesses, and no vampire can survive the sting of your trusty weapon, forged with strange alchemy using the blood of one such demonic creature. But never forget, you are but one link in a long chain of heroes destined to fight against evil forces for generations upon generations. So if you should fail, know that your legacy will follow after you. So yeah, I think the lore of the vampire killer weapon, which is the primary, like, it is the whip or the chain whip or the morning star that is kind of utilized by all of the Belmonts. The lore of that is that in order to create it to its full potential, it did require the blood of one, I think somebody in the Belmont clan or I think a related person who had been turned, sacrificing some amount of that their blood and allowing themselves to be killed to create this final weapon that was sort of infused with this level of power and unlocked its potential to truly deal damage to vampires and things like that. So it feels like it fits with a Blood Hunter to kind of like tie in that blood cost throughout, and it's got that cool, like, you know, Victorian horror kind of vibe to it.
So
at level 3, along with all of your other things, you also get the Rite of the Vampire Killer, which is a new Crimson Right to go along with your Crimson Right feature. In my framework for the Bloodhunter class, every subclass grants a unique blood curse and a unique right. So this is the one for the Order of the Vampire Killer. When you activate the right of the Vampire Killer on a melee weapon, the extra damage dealt by your right is the same type as the weapon used, and it becomes magical for the purposes of overcoming resistance to non-magical damage. So you get just a beefed up weapon. It still does slashing or piercing or bludgeoning damage, whatever it is, but it is magical damage and it does a little bit extra. Additionally, while this right is active, your weapon gains the following benefits. It gains the reach property. If it already has this property, its range extends by 5 additional feet. So adding that like kind of whip-like quality to any weapon that you like. If it's a maul, great, you have a reach maul. If it's whatever else you wish. Also, your weapon scores a critical hit on a roll of 19 or 20 on the d20, and your maximum HP cannot be reduced while you have this right active, lending the idea that if a vampire were to try and bite you and take some of your life force, it would not be able to do so, or it would not be able to reduce your health in such a way. You are somewhat immune to the effects of vampirism in that way. Additionally, you get the Blood Curse of the Hunter. So as a bonus action, you attempt to sharpen your focus on a creature you can see within 30 feet of you, which must make a charisma saving throw. On a failure, the cursed creature cannot take the hide action, and your attacks and spells ignore any damage resistances that the target has until the end of your next turn. So nice. You get to ignore damage resistances, and you can just always find this creature. It cannot hide from you while you have this curse active on it. And if you choose to amplify it, you extend the duration for 1 minute, and also you gain blind sight in case the creature has some ability to become invisible. It cannot hide from you still. You can sense it regardless. At level 7, you gain the Relentless Stalker feature. As a reaction, when a creature you have dealt damage to that you can see moves more than 30 feet away from you, you can move up to your speed toward that creature. Additionally, creatures you have dealt damage to have disadvantage on stealth checks to hide from you, and you have advantage on survival checks to track those creatures. So anything that you have dealt damage to has a harder time getting away from you. You sort of mark it in a non-magical way, just in a way of your bloodlust has activated in that moment. At level 11, you get an improved right. So the range of your right of the Vampire Killer weapon extends by 5 feet. And you can use a bonus action on your turn to spin the weapon rapidly until the start of your next turn. For the duration, ranged attacks against you are made with disadvantage as you shield yourself in a spinning whip. This was a thing that is, I don't know if it's in every game, but in some of the games you can like, there's a different button to like hold your whip and swing it, and it like deflects certain attacks and things like that, kind of acting like a shield. I was like, I want to make it do that. I want to make a thing that can do that.
It's very cool. It's very cool.
And then finally, at level 15, you get the Slayer feature. Your right of the Vampire Killer scores a critical hit on a roll of 18 through 20 on the d20. And additionally, when you score a critical hit against a Celestial, Fey, Fiend, or Undead, using your right of the Vampire Killer weapon, if after dealing damage to the target's remaining HP is less than your Bloodhunter level, it instantly disintegrates. So...
nice.
You can deal kind of extra crits against creatures that are nearing death, just blowing them completely away at level 15.
We love a damage threshold.
Yeah. I thought about something like, you know, regaining hit points or something like that, but I don't know, or regaining uses of things, but it wasn't really feeling right. So I feel like a little... bonus threshold of just destruction of those sorts of creatures feels right for this sort of thing. And especially I think captures the kind of fun thing that I enjoy in all sorts of video games where like if once you reach a certain power threshold, like the enemies that are lower, like significantly lower level than you just like or almost instantly destroyed. Yeah. Like yeah. you just like blow through them with like no
may concern. As well not even be there.
Right. Yep. They're just like, you know. I especially love way. It. I especially love it in like a turn-based RPG. When like you hit a certain level and when you trigger a battle with something that will definitely lose to you, it just doesn't even do the battle. It just is like, great, right. you won. It just
doesn't show up.
Here's the yep. rewards. You slash Peace. Out towards it and it's just yeah, it's gone. You're good. you would not lose this. You would have to be really bad at your turns to lose this battle. It's mathematically impossible, and so we've just decided that you win. So anyway, that is my Order of the Vampire Killer. It's definitely not exactly Trevor Belmont, but
yeah,
I tried to focus on the weapon as the thing, since that was sort of the most
yeah,
I don't know the most interesting piece of the kind of build. For me, I considered yeah, things like, you know, yeah. you can change the nature of this weapon as you increase levels and you can like choose upgrades and do different damage types and stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, that would maybe be okay, but it is a little complicated. And like the Bloodhunter already has kind of a few too complicated things for my taste. Yeah. So simplification was definitely the way to go here for me, I think. But I had a good time making it. I think this actually works pretty well with the additional changes that we made to yeah. the Bloodhunter. I think this actually has maybe some legs for being something that is even a little more so of a well-focused Ghost Slayer kind of thing. Yeah, there we go.
I agree 100%. I think this is a really nice framework to base future College of Creation Bloodhunter subclasses off of. I think when we did the rework of the class as a whole and you remade the other subclasses, I think those were also built well, but you're always going to have like, you're going to have that comparison to what the subclass was, whatever the subclass is, if it is ever updated for the 24 rules, like it's going to have that duality. So having a fresh subclass with your version of the Bloodhunter is really nice to look at. Like it feels really clean. It does highlight the weapon above everything else, but not in a way that feels ham-fisted. Really nice. Really nice. I love the threshold. I think that's something that is not used enough in the game as a whole. I think it's a really cool concept that should show up more in the game, especially at later levels. So I love any time that is included. It's very cool.
Yeah, thank like you. It. I appreciate like that.
Yeah.
How about you, Michael? What did you come up with for this week's creation?
Mine actually follows a kind of a similar path as yours. I definitely focused on the weapon first. But like I said, it fell victim a bit to being selected after our cowboy subclasses. I made a tax collector subclass that was centered around a whip. All of the That's features right. were whip focused. And when we pulled this, once I started looking into what was involved with the characters, I quickly realized that, I've already made this subclass, but it is not a subclass that the creator of this prompt can use because the tax collector is not a class that's available in any published books. So I did a weird hodgepodge copy paste thing here. So if you'd if you'd like to open your document, some of these are going to look familiar to you because I liked how I presented them in the other subclass and I just changed it
okay.
to be this. So I call this the Warrior of the Bloodbane. This is a monk subclass. I ported this over
okay.
To the monk mainly because the thing that stuck out to me the most was the amount of striking that these characters can actually do in the games. They can attack very fast. They can move very quickly, and they can strike a lot of different creatures within a short window of time. So I tried to really accentuate that part of the weapon. From the shadows of the castle walls, you emerge to cast a light on the darkness of oppression. Guided by a magical weapon passed down through your family tree, you seek to destroy the most cunning, vile, and unwieldy creatures of the night. The melancholy woven into your lineage acts as both a permeating reminder of the task set upon you and a nagging partner, pushing you towards more and more dangerous foes. Right at level 3, you gain the Holy Heirloom. Passed down through the generations of your people, you have come into the possession of the magical vampire killer Flail. Mm. The game statistics for your vampire killer are detailed below. This is almost exactly the layout that I had for the other subclass, with some monk-specific changes. So this is a flail. It's an uncommon weapon. It has the sap mastery property.
Okay.
This flail acts as a monk weapon for you. You gain a +1 bonus to all attack and damage rolls with it. Its range is increased to 10 feet from 5, and you can wield it as though it possesses the light property. So this can function effectively
nice.
As your focus weapon. You can replace any amount of damage dealt to an undead creature by this flail with radiant damage. If a creature other than you attempts to use this flail, they gain the poisoned condition and incur 1 level of exhaustion as long as it's equipped by them. So one interesting thing that I read as I was looking into the game, like once you as your player character in a Castlevania game kind of takes ownership of this whip, anybody, like nobody else can take it. Like if you're not a part of the Belmont family, it actively saps other people's life force by trying to wield this weapon, because it's only meant to be used by that specific lineage. So I wanted to inject some of that into this, where if anybody takes it, it can be, you know, you can be disarmed. They can try and steal this weapon from you, and they might succeed, but they're going to pay the price. And continuously get more and more exhausted the more they try and use it. Also at level 3, you gain the Undead Dissonance feature. You're predestined to be comfortable within the fray. If more than one undead creature is positioned within your melee range, you can strike 2 of them with a single attack roll if you're using your Vampire Killer Flail. If this rule applies to more than 2 creatures, you can choose which creatures you hit.
Okay.
Additionally, while within your melee range, undead creatures cannot benefit from any ability that grants a bonus for moving in a group, such as pack tactics or flanking. So if their damage stack, the more they have around you, it does not. They can't gain advantage from being around you. They can't move more or subvert difficult terrain by moving together. It just doesn't work when they're within your range.
That's very handy.
Yeah. At level 6, you gain the Symphonic Focus feature. Whenever you score a critical hit with your Vampire Killer Flail, you can make 1 additional attack as part of the same action. This attack does not need to target the same creature. So if you crit, you get to hit.
Nice. I love it.
Yeah.
It's so great. It's perfect.
Crits don't happen often, but when they do, you just keep on rolling.
Yeah.
Keep on rolling. At level 11, you gain the Empowering Rondeau feature. Your Vampire Killer Flail receives the following upgrades. One thing that I love about video games is skill trees or just empowerments in general. And that does, in a minor sense, appear in the Castlevania games. As you go through the games, your whip is upgraded in different ways. Mm-hmm. So you gain the following upgrades. The flail's damage increases to a D10 from a D8, and its reach increases by an additional 5 feet. And any creature hit by your Vampire Killer Flail also takes piercing damage equal to half your proficiency bonus, rounded down.
Ah,
so just a little bit
nice.
Of extra damage. Extra damage. And at level 17, the capstone here is called Dark Harmony. Whenever you take damage from an undead creature that is targeting only you, you can spend 2 focus points to negate that damage completely if it is less than your monk level.
Nice.
So interesting that we both went with threshold-based features for the capstones.
Yeah.
But yeah, It's not exactly the same as the tax collector subclass that I made, but it really is born of the same idea where you are given a weapon and the whole subclass is built around using that weapon specifically. So this one has, you know, an undead flavor, but I felt strange all week because I didn't want to do something else because I think this was the way that I would want to go. But also just having already done something like this, it felt weird not being 100% unique, but I think it does meet the brief for what the prompt asked for.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I think that the monk focus on a weapon is, it's a tricky line to walk, right? Yeah. I mean, the Kensei monk is always interesting to me, but never had the like strong appeal that I wish it did.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there's always that, there's that fine line to try and walk of, you know, what's going to be fun, you know, that doesn't detract from what the class is kind of supposed to do, which is primarily unarmed strikes. But I think that this works very nicely and like fits the brief of the sort of undead hunter kind of thing. I like that you sort of took the number of attacks kind of into account as a way to replicate the like amount of striking that you can do in a game that's, you know, got elements of that bullet hell like platformer, just hit things, just smash that button to attack as many times as you can.
Yeah.
Back in those classic old days. So I really like that kind of replicates that a lot, especially with the level 6 feature. I think that adds on top of that, especially if you can find ways to like manipulate advantage and things like that to make that even
give
more
yourself advantage, take the
common
feats, like, yeah, pull that crit down from 20, give it 18, 19,
do something there that'll give you that opportunity to use that more and more often. I think that's really cool. I like it. I think it's definitely a fun little monk that's very thematic, but I think still pretty mechanically sound, even outside of the thematic qualities. Like, I think it mechanically seems like it would work pretty well.
Thanks, man. Yeah, this is an interesting prompt, I think, for both of us. I think we both had kind of the same reaction when we pulled it. Like, what are we even going to do? How are we going to walk away from this and not make identical subclasses with these two characters? And I think that we actually did that. There's some mild overlap, but not so much so that they feel like carbon copies of each other. Nice. It helps that we picked two pretty vastly different classes. that does
definitely
aid the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely harder to make something that you are not super familiar with.
Yeah.
From a starting point, I think at least it's harder to make an entire like subclass concept around that thing.
Mm-hmm.
If I had been asked to make a weapon based on the vampire killer from Castlevania, easy. I will do that and that will be fine.
Yeah.
That one's easy. But like we've said it before, subclasses, since they are so good at like encapsulating a pretty significant concept into a single creation and communicating a progression, you know, from a starter, a novice, to a master of these things, you know, you are telling a story with the subclass. And so it's harder when you don't know what that story is. It's definitely more challenging to pull that off.
Yes.
And so hopefully we haven't, you know, completely missed the mark on that. We'll have to hear from our submitter to let us know how that goes. But even so, even it being somewhat more challenging, I think it was still a good thought experiment that I don't think I would have gone to the Blood Hunter if I hadn't been forced to kind of break the mold a little bit.
Sure.
I think so.
Sure.
I think that was enjoyable to kind of revisit that episode. I listened back through it just to see what we had said about, you know,
sure,
how that structure can go moving forward. Yeah, I really enjoyed the process of thinking through, you know, not just how to change the Blood Hunter, but instead how to like continue creating off of what we had already created. And I understand why you so frequently go back to the well of College of Creation things to continue your future creations.
It's great. It's great.
It's like a recursion machine, which is really very fun.
I think it's a strange concept because when we first started, I mean, granted, when we first started, we didn't have the backlog, right? We were starting from scratch. But I felt like I was so focused on making things fit within the game as it stood, you know, making something that would be universally acceptable, making something that, you know, more people would want to play than would not want to play. And now I think I've outgrown that way of thinking. It doesn't matter if people will use the things that I make. I certainly love it if they did, but it matters much, much less to me now. Because like both of these subclasses are right at home in a Strahd game, right? Like I would love to see this type of monk throw down opposite Strahd, or this Blood Hunter throw down in Barovia. But it doesn't necessarily need to be something like that for me to be happy to have made it. You know what I mean? If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I would love to see this Blood Hunter in a Strahd game. That was really what I was thinking about when making it, was like, okay, let me see. Putting this up against the Curse of Strahd module, like, how would this thing fare? How would it run? And I think it would be very fun.
Yeah.
Just generally. And I think the monk would as well. I think clearly the ability to take down undead really effectively is super great. I mean, yeah, undead dissonance plus symphonic focus. So you can attack two creatures, and if you crit, you can attack again as part of the same action. Like you can knock out a whole horde of zombies very quickly with this this thing at level 6.
You're just swinging your flail around.
Which would be so fun to do in Strahd's basement.
Yeah.
What a grand time that would be.
I think not enough chances in the game at large to just go into a room and clear waves and waves of super low level, like 1/8 CR enemies, just wiping them out.
Yeah, I mean, I just had a thought of, you know, a thing super cinematic to do in a game one time would just be to like put some low level enemies in a thing that I know one member of the party is totally able to deal with. Just put them in that room and then not actually even play out the battle. Just like step outside of the room and have the rest of the party hear the sounds coming from inside.
Yeah.
And just, you know, you walk out and the room is littered with zombie parts.
Yeah. We love it. We love it. Hey, this prompt came to us from Lucas, who sent us an email asking specifically for the Belmonts, and couldn't be happier to have made these for you, Lucas. I hope you enjoyed the things that we made for you. If you, out in listener land, have a prompt that you would like us to tackle, please send us an email. It does go into our big old list. We have a D20 table that we roll on every episode to see what we'll make next. And if you'd like to do that, you can send us an email at collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com or head over to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod. Send us a message over there. we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the episodes that we've already created, the creations that we've already made, which can all be found over in PDF form on the Patreon as well. We want to hear what you want us to make, and we hope to hear from you soon. Dan, should we roll for next episode?
Let's do it. Give me a moment. I will pull up our big list of homebrew prompts.
And I will grab a D20.
Thanks to those listeners who have sent in prompts for us, as always.
All right, here we go. Dan, that's an 8.
Okay, an 8. An 8 is a subclass. We're back to subclasses, our favorite, most favorite of all of the things that do. And this is the subclass that specializes in debuffing the enemy from John Steele, once again. I like that. I like a subclass that's got a debuff focus.
Yeah, love a subclass that doesn't denote the class.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a basic prompt at the surface, but also so much room to go in different directions. The removal of any small mechanic can be counted as a debuff. So what do we take? Who are we taking from? How much are we taking? What is the debuff?
Those
indeed. Are the questions we ask ourselves over the next several days as we work on this.
Lots of good lots of good support classes and support subclasses, often focused on buffing and healing, though.
Right.
And less frequently hyper-focused on debuffs. So that's fun to think about.
Yeah.
There is the witch class from the World Beyond Number folks. That is sort of a fun mix of druid and warlock and has some significant debuff abilities as well, which I think is very fun. But I am looking forward to thinking of something to make for this one.
Yeah, it'll be good. It'll be good.
Yes, indeed. Looking forward to it. Thanks for the prompt, John. And we will bring our debuffing subclasses next time.
Mm-hmm.
But before we go, Michael, do you have anything to say to the people?
Hey, I always have something to say to the people before we say goodbye. I'd like to speak just briefly again about our stance as the College of Creation on the state of things going on. Immigration and customs enforcement has made their way into my city. And it is a bit of a surreal happening because you watch the things that are going on television or on TikTok or wherever you consume your media and however you choose to fix the lens with which you view your media. Having it be so close to home is a really eye-opening thing. It makes you pay attention to everything that's happening. And I have, you know, two young kids, and if I am changed that viscerally just by a few sightings of ICE in my area, how people are feeling where it's most concentrated. If you are able at all, you know, there are several places, several GoFundMes that have been set up for the victims of these killings that have been happening. Methods where you can send not just monetary donations, but also supplies and things like that. Find ways to reach out to your neighbors out west. I guess out west for us. We're on the East Coast. But these larger concentrations of customs deployment, like Dan said a few episodes back, we are all stronger when we give to each other and help our neighbors be stronger. And right now, our neighbors are in Minnesota. We got to help raise them up so that they, in turn, can come back stronger and help raise the rest of us up when they change the target to a different blue state. Stay vigilant. Stay safe, please. And we're thankful that you're still listening to us.
Yeah, take care of yourselves, take care of your people in your community, watch out for each other. If you see something that doesn't feel right, look out for each other. It is gonna be together that we get through this. and we got to count on each other. So
yeah,
please do. Do find joy where you can. I can personally attest that that is an absolute necessity for me, to have connections and to have things that I still do that bring me joy. One of them is this show and my friendship with Michael.
Yes.
Another one is playing these games and finding ways to imagine a world and many worlds, where we get to decide what is real, and what is right. I love that. So, thank you, listeners, for helping me continue that. Thank you, Michael, for, helping give me an outlet for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Love you.
Love you all.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.